You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, once again, is our illustrious controller of New York City, Scott Stringer, who really needs no introduction. Scott, welcome back to Reaching Out.
It's great to be on your show, and it's great to talk about the issues of the day, Greg. So thanks for having me again.
Well, listen, why don't we start right away? Let's go with an article that was in one of the papers, and it says, Bill's Rage Thrives. And he was criticizing you for criticizing his wife, the first lady, for spending money on mental health services. And I believe the city council also held a hearing on this matter. Can you tell us what this little back and forth was about?
It's pretty simple. Look, improving mental health in New York City is a meaningful and necessary project. But as controller, I have to also look at the lack of transparency in the Thrive program. When you're spending close to $1 billion, you ought to be able to explain to taxpayers what you're getting in return. Right now, the administration is having a hard time answering those questions. So here's what we know. We know that about 20% of what the city says is part of the Thrive's $250 million annual budget can be identified in the city budget. So only 25% of the program we can see. So we calculate that they spent about $344 million of the $492 million that's been allocated. But we're having trouble tracking the program. It's a program with 54 initiatives spread over 20 agencies. And some of these initiatives have existed before Thrive and many didn't. So I've just said to the mayor, you know, show us the baseline statistics, like how many New Yorkers are enrolled in each initiative. Let's look at the community-based organizations that receive funding. This is my job, and I try to remind the mayor that whether it's Thrive or any other program, I'm going to look at it because the people on this who are listening to the show would expect nothing less. But so far, the response has been lacking. It's an incomplete data, partial performance data. If you're going to spend all this money, I want to know how they're measuring performance, how a program is actually impacting the lives of people. And that's for everyone's benefit, the people who work at Thrive, the people who will be helped by this program. And if there are imperfections in the program, well, let's fix it and straighten it out.
Okay. You know, there's one question. I don't know if this question was asked by the city council at their hearing, and I don't know if anybody's asked this question. But under what authority is Charlene McCray authorized to head up and spend city funding? She's not elected. She wasn't appointed by the mayor in the official capacity. So she's really not a city or government employee. So I'm just kind of
What I would say is, look, I have a lot of respect for the First Lady, and I do believe that this initiative is very important to her. They now have a staff, which wasn't in place before, to handle the work. So these are government employees. Okay. And so I'm glad now they're starting to round out the program. But I don't think that's the issue. I think that the issue is we have a lot of money going out the door. What is the performance of all of these initiatives? In other words, are they working? You know, I talk a lot about the homeless crisis in the city. When 5 years ago, we were spending $1.4 billion to manage the homeless crisis, 60,000 people living in shelter. Today, we have 62,000 people living in shelter, but the program has ballooned to $2.9 billion. And I always say, what are we getting? What's the value we're getting for the money? Are the people who are living in shelter, are they being helped? Are they moving out of shelter? Well, we don't see any evidence of that. Are the programs that this money is paying for working? Well, we haven't really seen a lot of data to support that. So I think in a lot of areas, we've seen a lot of money go out the door, but we haven't really seen fundamental change. And that is why I continue to speak out and say, one, let's save some money for a rainy day. But the money that we're investing in human infrastructure. We have got to make sure this money is helping struggling people in this town, people with mental illness, people who need an affordable apartment, folks who are being priced out of the city, the very people, people in your union who built this city, stayed here when everyone was running away, and now they're being priced out of their neighborhoods. These are the questions and causes I've been fighting for every day for the last 5 years.
Right, and we also need the services in our public schools. We need counselors, guidance counselors, and...
Well, we've actually audited that, and I agree with you. You know, I have... I'm a public school parent, so... And I think I'm the only city elected official, right, with kids today in the public school system. Max is in first grade, Miles is in kindergarten. Yes. And, you know, I don't know what their future holds or what problems will come their way. But, you know, when I was in high school, right, you know what you did? You went to the guidance counselor's office.
Right.
You didn't have to make a phone call. You didn't have to make 10 phone calls to just ask someone a question or say, hey, I'm not feeling okay, or I got family problems, or, you know, those issues.
Yes, and that's lacking in our schools. I don't know how that happened. In my son's school, which we're not in New York City, there are several guidance counselors. And each student is assigned a guidance counselor, and they have so many students to be in charge, and they see them through their entire career through high school. They move with them. And then when that group graduates, they start over again from freshmen.
What I would like to see Thrive work on is more on-the-ground services, especially in the schools, because you're absolutely right. You know, kid has an issue. Maybe it's bullying. Maybe it's a family problem. They need to go somewhere. I know everyone thinks life is all about their iPhone and there's an app for everything, but if you're in trouble, you want to be able to get to that person who's the expert on the ground, and I think we have to rethink a lot of what we're doing here. You know, just taking programs and sort of pushing them out to good organizations, sure, but are we really, is that the best way to go? And I think in some cases it is, and probably in some cases it's not.
Now, you had mentioned something earlier about employees of the city, my members being pushed out of their neighborhoods. They built this city and they should be allowed to stay here. You have an affordable housing plan. Can you tell us about your plan, your vision for affordable housing in this city? A lot of people say that, but I want to know from you what your plan is, because a lot of people don't know what Scott Stringer's controller's plan is for New York City and affordable housing.
Well, I'm happy to talk to you about it, Greg, and I thank you for asking, because there's no bigger issue facing New Yorkers right now, and that crisis is the rent. People are being forced out of the neighborhood, so going back to when the city had a fiscal crisis back, man, like in the 70s, people stayed and fought in their neighborhoods. They built those communities. There was no investment. There was no such thing as businesses coming into neighborhoods. Neighborhoods were being redlined, so people with very little resources raised families. I grew up in Washington Heights back then, and, you know, we knew we didn't have a lot in our neighborhood, but we had families and each other, and everybody lifted each other up. Today, those folks who were the pioneers and saved the city, a lot of our seniors, they're being pushed out of the city. And the immigrants who we want to come here, well, they don't have an entrance fee here that they can afford. A $1 or $2 million condo buys you an apartment in New York City? Come on. That's not the New York that we should be having. So I put forth a housing plan that would change the tax laws in Albany, raise the real property transfer tax, create a $400 million fund to build housing on city-owned land, reduce costs, and then lower the AMI of that housing. Right now, the housing plan that City Hall has, it's to give Midtown developers the right to build big, tall buildings. They have to commit to affordable housing, but here's the problem. The affordable housing is unaffordable for the people in our communities.
Right.
So they get the land, they get the luxury component, we get affordable housing that doesn't match with the community. So I would like to see the last leg of the de Blasio housing plan move 85,000 units, shift them to the area where we're most in need right now. My analysis shows that there's 580,000 people who are rent challenged, rent burdened. In other words, they're one step away from homelessness. And if that tips the other way, we are going to have a crisis the likes we've never seen. So let's shift some of this housing plan to meet the needs of people who make under $30,000 a year, or the 30% of the people who are working but they're forced to live in shelter. And let me also remind people, $30,000 for a lot of New Yorkers doesn't sound like a lot of money, right?
It's not.
It's not. But the people who earn those salaries are taxi drivers, folks that take care of your children in daycare centers, people who take care of your parents, part-timers, single parents. That's our city. We can't give up on the people who are the backbone of New York. They just don't make a lot of money. So the housing plan has to change. And look, Mayor LaGuardia built public housing, and it worked back then. Lindsay and Rockefeller, well, they were the architects of the Mitchell-Lama housing program. That was great middle-class housing. Koch gave all the vacant buildings that were abandoned and gave them to community-based organizations and built housing in the Bronx. We tried a different strategy, and while we have produced affordable housing, it's just not the affordable housing that hits us at the crisis point.
Now, you've done a study over the last few years, and you've identified over 1,000 vacant lots that could be available to build affordable housing on. Is that part of your plan?
That is part of our housing plan. So right now we estimate there's hundreds and hundreds of those lots that could be used to build the kind of housing I'm talking about. HPD double talks its way out of that question. But if you had city-owned land, community-based planning, and a subsidy that can lower the AMI, but also a fund for continued maintenance of the building so they never fall into disrepair like the NYCHA developments, then I think we're talking about something pretty compelling. All we have to do is raise the real property taxes. There's a way to do this. It would benefit everybody. And this is something that I'm going to fight for. We're getting tremendous support from working people in the city. You know, I think folks are at the point where talk is cheap. They want ideas. They want plans. They want a transportation system that gets them to work. They want to be able to live in the communities either they grew up in or they've dedicated 20 or 30 years of their professional life to that community. They want to make sure that as new people come into the city, our young millennials, that they will also give us vitality. But, you know, entry-level jobs don't get you a $2 million condo. And if that's all we're building, then where are they going to go? Well, they don't have to be here like they used to. They could go elsewhere. And wouldn't that be a tragedy to send our next generation to places like Iowa and Idaho? And that's not what they want. They want to be here with our diversity, with our economy, and be part of the fabric of the greatest city on earth. Let's give them that opportunity already.
And speaking of diversity, you also have a campaign for a push for a chief diversity officer to be included in the city charter.
Well, we need the union, and we need Greg Floyd, because we know that the current MWBE program that tries to move contracts to women and minority-owned businesses, out of that some $20 billion procurement spend by the city, only 5% goes to women and minority-owned businesses. It's a disgrace. I've letter-graded agencies, as you know. I've appointed my own chief diversity officer. First, it was Carol Wallace, now Wendy Garcia. We've got to up the spend in these agencies. They are not moving to give contracts to qualified women and minority-owned businesses, and it is hurting our city, because when you don't have diverse people who are working for the city, you don't create wealth in all of our communities. So I believe we should have a chief diversity officer like I have in the controller's office, or I think we need one that reports directly to the mayor, whoever the mayor will be in the future. We have it codified in the charter. And then we need a chief diversity officer in every city agency that works every single day looking at how we can promote spend with women and minority-owned businesses. 5% in a city that's 80% women and people of color, and the money only goes to the vendors of a bygone era, that's not right. And I see this as controller. Yes, it's a civil rights issue for sure, but it makes no economic sense. Because when you invest in diverse businesses and diverse communities, what happens? You're able to pay that higher rent. You're able to get your kids the things that they need. You're able to put away a couple of dollars so you can lead a middle-class life. And the fact that the procurement pool excludes 80% of the businesses in the city, I just find outrageous. So I want the City Charter Revision Commission to put this on the ballot. Let the people decide about a chief diversity officer. And that's why we have contacted the commissioners. We are working to raise public awareness. We're working with clergy here with you today to talk about this critical issue. But it's absolutely unbelievable that we give the city agencies a D-plus based on the actual spend of city agencies through procurement with women and minority-owned businesses.
Now, the city charter revision just held meetings, and this wasn't raised with them at that time?
Well, I have an appointee on the Charter Revision Commission, and it has been raised, and we've done, and I'm hoping that as part of their deliberations that they will bring this to the forefront and place it on the ballot. I don't have a read where they're going. And listen, we're not trying to hold demonstrations and, you know, force them into anything. It's a deliberative process. There's many things they're considering. But I do think it common sense says that, you know, if you have a chief diversity officer in the city charter, then a mayor has to listen, more likely to listen to that person. A CDO is codified in the charter, a commissioner has to listen, can't remove that position, can't erase that position. And the fact that we've been urging the appointment of a CDO at City Hall for the last 6 years and it hasn't happened, well, now we have an opportunity in the charter revision process to actually perhaps place it on the ballot. And I'm very confident people would be like, yeah, we should totally do that. We want to spread the wealth. We want people to have opportunity. This is what the city's all about.
I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. With me, very special guest, Comptroller Scott Stringer. And we're here talking about the issues that affect New York City. The city's about to announce a budget. What do you think about the city budget? What should we be looking for? Any surprises? Anything that we should...
I think as we analyze the budget, there's a lot of good things in it that help people, but I want to raise a bit of a red flag that the economy is tightening. We don't have the resources that we had at the beginning of everyone's term. I do think we have to set aside more money in a rainy day fund. Look, you never know what comes our way, but you know, after 9/11, funds were depleted. After the Hurricane Sandy, funds were depleted. Unfortunately, when bad things happen, it takes a lot of money out of the system. And we have to up our spend. So I've said to the mayor, and he's now agreed, that we should look at, you know, doing efficiency savings at agencies. And the reason we do it now, after 5 years, is not to lay off people or to harm programs, but just to look at ways to be more efficient so we never have to get to that point if a crisis happened. So I'm going to keep tabs on that. And again, you know, I want to look at homeless spending. Why don't we see results? I want to look at some areas in the Department of Education, the Department of Corrections. Here we have an inmate population that's going down, yet violence and costs is going up. Come on, somebody help us here. You got to manage a system a little better.
Violence and costs is going up, inmate population is going down. Mm-hmm. Because you're pushing to let more people out that probably are not ready to come out, and they're creating havoc in the streets. So
we've looked at what's also happening within the correction system. I think it's a management issue. Look, there's a lot of hardworking correction officers who put their lives on the line, and I want to make sure they're safe, want to make sure the inmates are safe, and I also want to make sure that this huge cost, we're now paying $300,000 per detainee.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, that's a lot of money, and you see more, and there are less. So why are we spending so much money when you left less people in the system? So it's something that we keep raising, and we're going to continue to talk about.
Are they giving them steak every night?
No, you know, listen, I think the real issue is how do you manage a sprawling system, modernize it, work with people. But again, this administration has got to understand that every dollar is precious. So when you spend a dollar, you got to get us a dollar worth of success. Now, that's not going to happen every time. We saw that with renewal schools, right? They tried, had to write off $750 million. But I think they could have been more active, this administration, in watching those dollars, watching early what was working, what in that case, what was not working, and cut our losses much earlier, because we don't know what's going to happen with the Trump administration. We don't know what's going to happen with the international economy. Every day around the world, something disturbing comes our way that we analyze. And our economy in New York City is also tied into the international economy, so we don't totally control what happens here. We have a president who is erratic, and I'm being polite because I'm on a public radio show with you, but he is totally out to get our city. The loss of state and local tax deductions is problematic for us.
I'm glad you mentioned that. A lot of people left the city.
And we'll see for sure in April where we are with that, but it's certainly not good news. No one, we don't want people to walk out, and people who can't afford their neighborhoods, or people who have money who don't want to live here anymore. That is not what, we don't want an exodus. We want to be the city that allows everyone, come all. That has been the beacon of our city, and we have to keep it that way.
Now, I don't know if I heard anyone ask you this question. What do you think about Amazon?
Look, I think the deal was a problem when from day one. When the mayor and the governor negotiated this in secret, that is not the way you do business in this town. There was a real question of $3 billion in subsidy programs that sort of happened without any kind of public review. There was not time to work with the residents of Long Island City and the surrounding neighborhoods that have already been impacted by gentrification, resiliency issues. Why didn't this project go before the city council for a rational discussion with all the stakeholders? And when we've been successful with companies, we've negotiated so those companies understand we're a union town. We've negotiated to make sure that there are public benefits that reflect what they're doing, whether it's affordable housing or other help to the city. So this was just a big, colossal failure. And going forward, we have to continue to bring business here, but we have to do a better job bringing out a transparent process. You know, Greg, when I was borough president, I had to deal with these kind of issues, university expansion throughout Manhattan. And I was just like, you know, we're not doing this without the community. And we're going to look at ways to make sure that gentrification gets contained, that communities get what they need. And it's not easy to do. It takes a lot. But between these rezonings passed by the city council that have just created this gentrification pressure, and then Amazon comes in a secret deal. Of course people are going to be upset about it, elected representatives who have to deal with the infrastructure of their communities. We do want to attract business like Amazon. We want people to come and do business here. But this totally broke down, and it should never happen like this again.
Okay. What would you have – you already outlined what you have done. Would have done differently. You would have informed everybody ahead
of time.
Well,
no, first of all, you tell people what's going on. You bring – opportunities for elected officials and their constituents to hear the plan, comment on the plan, change the plan, hold to the issues we keep dear, which is, are we really going to get all these good quality jobs? Are we going to continue to be a union town and support labor in when a business comes? This is all the work we've done for many, many years. And this is how you work it. And, you know, this is why government has to do its part. I mean, Amazon took the ball and ran home, but we didn't. Secret deal? I mean, you can't do that in this town and shouldn't be able to. Columbia University was a very contentious expansion fight, but it was a public fight, and there was a EULA process, and it went to the city council and the borough president and the community board. While it was imperfect, it gave people the opportunity to voice their opinions. There was no such thing as a done deal until it was a done deal.
I'm sorry, that's all the time we have for this segment.
We covered a lot, sir.
We did.
Wow.
You're always welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237 Teamsters. Our very special guest was our controller, New York City, Scott Stringer.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.